big number so far, and I just want to continue to improve them. You know, working hard in practice with my O-line, and you know, hopefully we keep going.
The success will continue. I just have a feeling, and I'm not being a homer saying that. I mean, Coach Wilder has done a phenomenal job. All his coaches, they've done a phenomenal job.
Welcome back. You're inside the Monarch Asylum, your home for all things Old Dominion football related. My name is David Agudelo. I'm the host of this podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at ODU Asylum. I got to thank everyone for the support once again. Episodes 1 and 2, we're getting a lot of people, a lot of positive feedback. Got some listeners overseas, some in the UK, and it's been a lot of positive feedback, so I can't thank everyone enough. The voices you heard at the top of the show, Ray Lowry, the nation's leading rusher, I like the way that sounds, and Jay Harris, Old Dominion class of 1987, and one of the lead anchors on ESPN SportsCenter you see on a nightly basis. First of all, Old Dominion, Monarch Nation, give yourself a hand. Give yourself a nice pat on the back. You're the first team in history to sell out their first 42 games. Well, that's what it was last week. Well, you can now make it 43. Old Dominion just showing great support for their team. And this 43rd game will sure to be a noisy one with NC State Wolfpack coming to town. A big week for the Monarch Nation out there. First things first, I do have to give out a gift certificate. We have our first prize we're giving out this year to $25 to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters, and that is Tom Newman out of Chesapeake. He tweeted a picture. I must say, I'm a little bit upset. I thought we'd have a little better turnout on the picture contest, but we did have a couple, but Tom was the winner. He had a nice view from the end zone to watch the game, and he tweeted out a picture. And that's all you had to do with the hashtag Monarch Asylum, and you had a chance to win a $25 gift certificate to Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters. It's a small batch coffee roaster located in Virginia Beach at 2234 West Great Neck Road. It's just near the intersection of Shore Drive. It's open Saturday and Sunday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. or by appointment. Whether by the point or by the pound, great coffee has never been more convenient. You can get more information on Lynn Haven Coffee Roasters at lynnhavencoffee.com or email Mike at lynnhavencoffee.com. Once again, Tom Newman, thanks again for the picture, and I hope you enjoy the coffee. Now let's talk a little bit about the game we saw last week, Norfolk State. The rain was just a pain. I've actually had to deal with two rain delays so far down here in Miami, and you can't get a real groove going. So the game started with a 15-minute delay, and then halftime saw about an hour. But ODU did a great job handling that. Coach Wilder mentioned post-game how they made sure the kids were hydrated and stretched out and even fed them some bananas and some food to make sure that they didn't get hungry. So ODU definitely did a good job of handling that situation, as well as with the fans, having to go back to their cars and sit there with the severe weather coming through. So it was nice to see everyone kind of persevere through that and come out with a big win. Now, what did we see on offense? Well, I think we wanted to see a little more balance this week, but unfortunately I think the weather played into that. 59 rushes as a team last week. I mean, I don't know if any ODU fan ever thought we'd see 59 rushes as a team, and only 22 passes. So my, have the times changed from the Taylor Heinicke era, and it only took two games for that change to happen. My question is, can ODU fans get used to that? I know I can, as long as they keep winning. There were some new tweaks in the offense this week, and we saw it right off the very first drive with Zach Pascal getting some touches out of the backfield. That was a new twist added this week by offensive coordinator Brian Scott. That's what Bobby Wilder told us after the game. And he said we're going to see an addition to the package each week. You know, I said that the first episode. I said I don't even think Bobby Wilder knew what this offense looked like, that it was really going to be a week-to-week process. And that's proving to be the case right now. So Zach Pascal comes in the game. He gets 8 touches for 69 yards, really provides a nice little spark out of the backfield. What I found most interesting was the use of the other running backs. You know, if you want to win, you have to get your talented players on the field. And it's no doubt Old Dominion's pretty deep at running back. We saw Kason Strong get some touches, 12 carries, 36 yards. He found pay dirt too, scoring a touchdown. I was most intrigued by the fact when they put two running backs on the field at the same time. Of course, you're not going to take Ray Lowry out too much. But when you do, how can you get the other guys on the field? Now, later on in this interview on this show, you'll hear Ray Lowry talk about Vincent Lowe, and he compared him to Darren Sproles. He said that's our Darren Sproles, and that's exactly how ODU used him. They put Vincent Lowe on the field in the slot. He actually led the team in receiving with 4 catches for 41 yards. That's a pretty interesting wrinkle, which I'm looking forward to see how they further exploit that as the season goes on, because like I said, you have to get your playmakers on the field. And Vincent Lowe, even after the game, admitted that last year when he got his first touch, he was very nervous. But this year, that wasn't the case. That he felt good having the balls in his hand, and he feels dangerous in the open field. And he just has a different mindset this year. And I think that experience last year is really going to help him. So I loved seeing the two running backs on the field. You know, let's mix it up. Let's use the talent we have. And running back is definitely a strength on this team. Now, we got to look at the quarterback, Shuler Bentley. I mean, I think they wanted to get him some more comfortable throws this week. I think they wanted to break out some more play action. I think they wanted to just try and get him a little more comfortable back there. Once again, I think the weather kind of affected that they couldn't really throw it as much. He had pedestrian numbers for the second game in a row, 12 completions, 22 attempts, only for 122 yards, and he did throw his first interception. So not a real impressive performance, but, you know, we knew they were going to lean on the run this season, so it's not unusual to see that many throws. Bobby Wilder, after the game, said that his stat line may not look that good, but he played well. He did have some overthrows, and he was plagued by some drops, too. There were about 3 or 4 drops by the wide receivers that would have changed those numbers a little bit. But he's basically, Wilder said, he's where he needs to be right now. You know, and that's one thing I like about Bobby Wilder, too. It seems like he's a bit of a chess player out there when it comes to football. You know, they're putting a little more on the field every week offensively, just enough to make the next team think. And also, you know, not trying to put too much on the plate for a young offense early in the season. You don't want to break the whole playbook out early. You know, find what's working and slowly add the pieces as the season goes on. So he also mentioned, Bobby Wilder, that misdirection needed to be added because too many people are focusing on Ray. And why wouldn't you? He's leading the nation in rushing. I mean, he's got over 200 yards each of the first 2 games. That misdirection with having Vincent Lowe out there and just really mixing it up a little bit is really what this offense needs, so people can't just focus on Ray and just stack the box. Now let's look at the defensive side of the ball. They were amazing once again. Just such a great display on defense. Only giving up 3 points. Of course, the special teams punt block gave up the 7 points for the Norfolk State's 10. But just a great performance. Before the game, Bobby Wilder said he wanted to make Norfolk State have long drives on defense. And that's what they made him do. They had to drive. And they had struggled putting the ball in the end zone. They only had 266 total yards. You know what I really like about this defense is at least the first 2 weeks, they've made the play when it's needed to be made. You know, you can give up some yards. You're not going to shut everyone down all the time. There's a lot of talented players out there. There's a lot of talented offenses. I mean, all the rules now are geared toward offense. So if you can have that bend but don't break off defense, which it looks like ODU has right now, that's going to be huge. But most importantly, they make the really big plays when needed. We saw it first week against Eastern Michigan when they had Tim Ward had the tipped interception to seal that game. And then last week, we saw it with Justice Davila getting the forced fumble when Norfolk State was about to punch the ball in the end zone. I mean, that score would have made it 24-17 with an onside kick ensuing, and then you never know what happens. So the defense really stepped up. It looks like it's also a defense by committee that each week it looks like there's someone different kind of making a play, at least this early in the season. And that usually happens when you have a team that's so young. But overall, the defense was really above average and really handled their business. Now they're going to have a much, much tougher job on their hands this week with NC State coming to town. Now we will talk, give you my take on the NC State game coming up a little bit later. But right now, let's hear what the nation's leading rusher has to say. Ray Lowry, coming up next. All right, we're back in the Monarch Asylum. Very excited for the next guest. We've got to keep the chains moving on the program, and no one keeps the chains moving better than this man, Ray Lowry. Ray, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Listen, we all know about the numbers. What does it sound like? 438 yards, 6 touchdowns after 2 games, and you're leading the nation in rushing.
Yeah, you know, big numbers so far, and I just want to continue to improve them. You know, working hard in practice with my line, and you know, hopefully we keep going.
Now, everyone knows what you do on Saturday. I'm curious what the rest of your week is like, because when you have that kind of workload, I know it's important. You know, you got to take care of your body. You got ready for next week. Got to get ready for next week. What is Sunday like for you?
Sunday is mainly, we do a flush run, and then around 12 o'clock, we do like a little couple gashers, then get treatment, iced up, like ice baths and hot tubs. But then we watch film after, and usually have to bathe ourselves after that to relax.
How much time do you spend in the ice tub?
I do like 15 minutes in ice, and I go back to the hot tub for like 10 minutes, and then I finish it with like 15 more minutes of ice tub.
And now when we go on to Monday and Tuesday, I know you guys practice on Tuesday and Wednesday, but you got a heavy workload at school, or how do you kind of balance also that kind of recuperation process?
Yeah, we don't practice on Mondays. That's like an academic day, so I do most of my schoolwork on Mondays. And then Tuesday we have practice in the morning, so we go to our classes throughout the whole day, and I try to get two treatments a day, my body rested. But I usually balance my schoolwork at night time.
And what exactly kind of treatment? Is it just more ice? Is it just kind of stretching out? Or when you say treatment, what exactly are you getting done?
Yeah, it's just ice and heat, and then getting stretched out by the trainers. And then get, like, rolled out, too.
Oh, yeah, the rollout. I love the rollout.
Yeah.
Looking at your high school numbers, you had some pretty amazing high school numbers, but then when I look at the schools that recruited you, it wasn't a lot of really big schools. Was that kind of maybe puts that little chip on your shoulder when you didn't see the big schools really come after you? It was mostly a lot of the smaller schools?
Yeah, it did put a chip on my shoulder because a lot of them will come into my high school, but never really offer me scholarships. So, you know, I just know I got to keep grinding, doing better, and wherever I ended up, I knew I had to make a name for myself.
What do you think it was that scared him away? Was it maybe your size? Because you do have that. You don't look like the biggest guy, but you've got really deceptive toughness and speed.
Yeah, I think it was mainly my size. A lot of schools came in to look at my size. That's what a lot of coaches said. They came in to see how big I was, how tall I was.
Oh, they wanted to see it in person.
Yep.
When did you know that this, I mean, going into this season, you know, when you lose a guy like Taylor Heinicke and when you have the success that you had running the ball last year, I think everyone knew that the offense was going to become a little more run-oriented. When did you realize it was going to be kind of this run-oriented? Was there a certain time in camp or maybe even in the spring where you kind of realized it?
Yeah, I realized it towards the end of the season. We started putting in, tight end, Will Melvin Vaughn, and then we actually started doing a lot more during camp, and that's when they said that we'll be running the ball a lot more this year. We put in a tight end to be more effective in the run game, and so far it's worked pretty well.
And what do you like about your running back group? It looks like you got a lot of depth with Jeremy Cox, Vincent Lowe, and some of the guys, and even Kayshawn got a lot of play last week.
Yeah, we're all good running backs. You know, we push each other in practice. We work hard, and I know that they can do just as good and contribute to the team.
All right, I want to do a little, word recognition. You just kind of give me a sentence. I'm going to give you a player's name, and you just kind of give me a sentence what you think about him. Jeremy Cox.
Okay, what do I think about Jeremy Cox?
Yeah, just give me – when I say Jeremy Cox, what kind of player is he? What do you think about him, you know, when you watch him out there?
He has a great size, you know. He's 6'1", 215, so he's one of the bigger backs. And, you know, he has a lot of power, and he also has speed. You know, he can get downhill in the one or two gaps, and he can go outside too.
Vincent Lowe. What about Vincent Lowe?
Vincent Lowe, you know, he's like Darren Sproles. I'd say, short, but quick and fast. It's hard to catch him, hard to keep him contained. So that's one of his biggest strengths.
Kayshawn Strong.
Sean Strong's also a good man. I feel like he's more like me out of Jeremy Cox and Vinny Lowe. You know, he has power too, but he has killer speed as well. And yeah, he made guys miss.
Shuler Bentley,
he's a leader on and off the field. You know, he's probably one of the hardest workers on the team. Smart, and yeah, he's doing well for us right now.
And last one, Bobby Wilder.
Coach Wilder, he's a good guy, and he's a great coach too. So I talk to him whenever I want. He's really outgoing, and I know he's there for us.
I know he's really big on situational football, and he's kind of one of those.
Yeah.
He covers every aspect of a game plan. How does he help with like the mental aspect of a game? Because I know that's sometimes as big as the physical aspect.
Oh, yeah, he does that a lot. He puts us in different situations throughout practice. You know, sometimes he'll make the offense go bad 4th and 20 and say, you got to score here. So, like, he challenges a lot, and he knows it'll work out for us, and we're going to see that sometime throughout the season.
What's the campus like this week? NC State coming in town. It was your breakout game, really, last year, and I know everyone must be excited.
Oh, yeah, we're all excited. You know, it's like to see how the fans are going to be that game. You know, I know it's going to be sold out, one of the biggest games in football history. So, you know, we're excited for this game, and hopefully we can get this win.
What are your fellow classmates saying when they talk to you or about this game?
I know they're all just excited, too. Excited as us, you know, excited to see us and cheer us on. So, I know we want to, that'll be a big win for this campus, and that's what we're trying to do.
So, what do the Monarchs need to do to win this game and to beat NC State? What do you guys have to do?
Just got to play our game, you know, offensively. No turnovers, you know, just play each play at a time, you know, no mental mistakes, and just play our game, play how we do, and we'll be able to win.
All right, last couple questions for you, Ray. I do have to ask you, what do you squat in the gym when you're doing your leg day?
We maxed out for squat in spring. I did 500.
500, wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Is that one of the highest on the teams? Is there anyone on the team who beat that?
I think there was a couple linebackers that beat that.
And I do have one more question for you. I don't know. Do you have a nickname?
Nah. I know my family, they just called me Ray Ray when I was little, but I kind of grew out of that. So yeah, no nickname.
Yeah, because the one I'm pushing is Baby Bull, because I love the way you run the ball. You kind of keep your legs running. You have that kind of deceptive size and speed. I like your speed. It's very deceptive because I keep expecting someone to catch you. No one ever does. And then you're really tough to, I mean, for your size, you're really tough to take down. So if you hear someone say Baby Bull, that's the nickname I'm trying to spread, Baby Bull. Ray Baby Bull Lowry.
All right, that's fine.
All right, hey, Ray, thank you so much for your time. Good luck this week against NC State, and maybe we can do this again in the future.
All right, thank you.
We're back here in the Monarch Asylum. Very excited for the next guest we have on air. We have welcome to the program, ESPN's Jay Harris, Old Dominion class of 1987. Jay, how you doing today?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for coming on the program. I had to cut you on the program because it's the biggest game this week in ODU football history as they welcome the NC State Wolfpack to Forman Field. So I had to get one of the biggest alumni. Of course, you're on SportsCenter from Tuesday to Saturday, late night, 9 and 11, and so that's why I had to get you on the show.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I do got to pick your ear. How close do you get to follow ODU sports right now?
Football specifically, I try to make at least one or two games. If I can't, if it's not on television, I'll follow the ODU football Twitter feed, and I'll do the same for basketball. If it's an ESPN game, whether it be an ESPN3 or ESPN2 or wherever, if I can turn it on, I'll watch it.
Do you actually get a chance to go see a game? Because I know they had a couple games up north, like in the recent years against Monmouth. So is that basically what happens? The schedule comes out, you scour it and see what fits your schedule?
Yes. Yeah. And if I can make it happen, I will. I haven't been to an away game for a few years. I think the last one I went to was Rhode Island. That was several years ago. I just haven't been able to make it. But when I can, I go.
Now, obviously, you're a big sports fan. What does it mean to you to finally have football? Only 6 years old, but they've never had a losing season. And I know what sports culture is like at a place like ESPN, where there's a lot of smack talking and people are proud of their teams. What's it mean to you to have a not just a football team, but a successful football team?
It's absolutely phenomenal, especially to come back to campus and remember Foreman Field as it was in the mid-'80s. And the only competition I saw was when Norfolk State came over and used our field. And going to those games, we wanted to try and get football, but at the time it was too an expensive adventure and they were like, no. But to go back and to see the field, to see the boxes, to see the stadium filled, to feel the excitement inside and outside, the tailgating, it's absolutely amazing.
And basketball-wise, I mean, they've always had a good basketball team. But when the tournament comes around and they're in there, listen, I don't often fill out a bracket, but I always put them in the Sweet 16 automatically because, you know, I'm a little bit of a homer like that.
You're supposed to be. That's what we're supposed to do.
That's true. And my thing is also is like people like, you're just picking them because that you went there. And I'm like, no, but I think they're good. And then if they do go that far, then I look like the genius. If not, I'm just a homer, so I can live with that.
That's true.
What's your reaction like when you get back to campus? I know that you gave the commencement speech in 2004. How is it when you get back there? What's the welcome like for you?
You know, the welcome is very cool. This is going into my second year on the Board of Visitors, so I get down at least for my meetings four times a year. But the welcome is walking through Webb Center. If some folks recognize me, it's really cool. I appreciate it. I appreciate what ODU helped grow me into. I appreciate the fact that I get to rep ODU on this stage, and I just try to make folks proud.
How many people at ESPN probably, I know down here in Miami, I get a lot of ODU and people don't know who they are. And now people actually come up to me and say, hey, you know, I saw your team the other day, man, they look good. Or, hey, I saw your quarterback, Taylor Heinicke, made in the NFL, man, that's cool. What's up with him? Has that happened a lot? People learned more about Old Dominion because of you?
You know what? No, not necessarily because of me. I mean, folks here know that I went to Old Dominion. I mean, I've got a bunch of ODU stuff in my cubicle, including an old football helmet, and my little Monarch basketball backboard here that I'm looking at. But folks know the school and the upsets. I mean, in the mid-'90s when we beat Villanova, and that's the first thing when I met Kerry Kittles, I reminded him of that game. That was cool to be able to do that. And just the fact that they came out of the box football-wise winning. And of course, the Lady Monarchs are a good entree to any conversation with the success that they've had over the years. So people know Old Dominion. The football team has just been able to take that to extra heights with its success. And you mentioned the NC State game this week, the biggest football in the history. I'll say the first biggest because there will be more. We will have more. The success will continue. I just have a feeling, and I'm not being a homer saying that. I mean, Coach Wilder has done a phenomenal job. All his coaches, they've done a phenomenal job. And these guys on that team have so much heart and soul and grit. It's just a pleasure to be associated with them.
No, and they play hard. I know they take after Coach Wilder. I mean, the fact they've never had a losing season, that's a bragging point for me, you know, when I
absolutely
talk to people,
absolutely,
you know, even in six seasons. I don't care what level play. You never had a losing season, you're doing something right.
Agreed.
We're talking with Jay Harris of ESPN. You can follow him on Twitter, at @JayHarrisESPN. I know you started your career in Norfolk, went to Pittsburgh. Was the game plan for you to always eventually to get to ESPN?
No, not at all. I was doing news in Norfolk and in Pittsburgh. And I just happened to send a tape. I was anchoring at a station in Pittsburgh. I sent a tape to a buddy of mine who worked here at ESPN just to give his critique, and he showed it to some folks, and they liked me enough to ask me to come audition. Because I mean, a lot of folks who don't understand the inner workings of this business think we just come in and grab a cup of coffee and walk down to the set and do the show and then go home. But that's far from the truth. We write a lot. I mean, we're journalists. We are in this because we like to tell stories. So that's what I've always done. So basically I transferred those skills in the news environment to the sports environment. It's the same thing. I'm still telling stories. I'm just not telling stories about, say, the Pittsburgh school board anymore. I'm telling stories about the NBA, the NFL, or on those great nights, Old Dominion sports, you know? So I just used the skills I had, and in someone's eyes, aced the audition and the interview, and they wanted to offer me a job, and going on 13 years later, I'm still here.
What was the decision process like? Did he have to think about it, or was it like a no-brainer?
No, it wasn't a no-brainer. I had to think about it because it wasn't a career goal of mine. I was looking more. My ultimate goal was the Today Show or Good Morning America. That's where my head was. But once I got here, and especially doing the 6 p.m. show for so many years, I was doing the evening news of sports. That's what I did at 6 o'clock every night. And I used to co-host. Well, fill in for then Cold Pizza, now First Take. And that's, you know, sports version of the Today Show or Good Morning America. So I've gotten to do everything that I wanted to do. It's just been in sports and not news. And plus I get to smile a lot more doing sports. I mean, when you're on a serious news story, they don't really like it when you smile.
Yeah. And I always say too, when there is a serious news story, then they have the serious news people that take over, like the Bob Lees and guys like that. They tend to come in and handle that heavy lifting.
Yeah, that's true. Especially when it gets that heavy. There are a lot of great journalists in this shop who handle the heavy stories and who can yuck it up with the best of them also.
Take us a little inside the process for producing an 11 o'clock Sports Center, because I know I've been doing television news for 17 years, and I always think people are surprised when we did a really nice story with the Dolphins receiver the other day, and it was a whole day to set up. It took me 3 or 4 days to edit, all for like a 3-minute piece. And people don't realize how much work really goes into producing a show.
Well, that's a good example of what you just gave him on producing a nice feature piece. My day on the 11 o'clock show, my day begins at 5 p.m. with our show meeting, and the producer, the coordinating producer, director, and all the production assistants, the researcher, we sit around and we talk about ideas for the show. Whatever has been going on, whatever's hot in the news at that moment, how we're going to cover it that night, the games that are on that night, which ones we want to highlight, which highlights we want to do. The producer maps out a rundown and creates the show from our ideas meeting, and then assigns stories, assigns anchors, anchor reads, assigns anchors to write particular things, whether it be voiceovers, leads to packages, leads to sound, or highlights. We are assigned, and so we go to research, we write, we research, we write, we read, we rewrite, we re-research, and we do that all night long until the show goes on the air. And then between our walk from the newsroom to the studio, anything can happen. It was very frequent on the 6 o'clock show that the top of the show would change in that 10 minutes between 5:45 and 5:50, the time it took to get down to the studio, everything would change.
And in that instance, don't you have to you trust everybody, because you don't have time to sit down and write something, and there's breaking news, and now you're cold reading something out of the prompter, or someone's barking in your ear, and the show starts in 30 seconds or a minute sometimes.
Absolutely. A lot of trust. It's a serious team effort. It is a serious team effort to put SportsCenter on the air. And it amazes me every night that after the show, a show just came out of that meeting. We just did that. That amazes me every night still.
Once again, talking with Jay Harris from ESPN. You can follow him at Jay Harris ESPN on Twitter. I did notice a couple things. Take me back to your first ever hole-in-one.
Oh, you had to bring that up.
That's a heck of a story.
Yeah, it was cool. It was at Mike Woodson's assistant coach for the Clippers at his tournament in Las Vegas last summer. And it was par three, I think the 17th hole. I can't remember. All I remember was I put a good swing on the ball, and it hit the hill and rolled right, and it rolled in. I was actually the third person to shoot on that hole. My buddy Jeremy, my teammate Jeremy, hit the first shot. It was really good. I mean, he hit the hill and rolled right past the hole, so we had a birdie chance. The next guy kind of shanked his into the woods, and I actually used his tee. So he would have to give me an assist because I just went down to put my ball where his tee was and put a good swing on the ball. And the caddy was following it with his range finder. He's like, I don't see your ball. I think it's in the hole. I think you just won a car. And we're like, I'm like, no, I did not stop. I did not win a car. They started to get excited. And my buddy rode down to the hole and looked in it and turned to us and put two hands in the air like touchdown. And I won a car.
And what kind of car did you win?
It was a Range Rover Evoque, the smaller one.
That's not a bad prize, but I know it was your buddy's tee. So does he get to drive it on weekends or something like that?
No. I didn't take the car. I took the cash.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, probably a smart move. Probably a smart move.
Yeah.
Well, Jay, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. Keep repping ODU, and I know everyone usually watches SportsCenter with a little bit of pride, knowing that there's a Monarch on that desk, especially so often, you know, on the nights you work, you're on there quite often.
Go Monarchs all the way. I appreciate you, David.
All right, we're in the last block here for the Monarch Asylum podcast, episode 3. I do have to explain the what's happening theme. When I was in college at ODU, the pep band, during a basketball game, whenever another team had a little struggle or ODU went on a run, they'd always play the what's happening thing. So I can't help but think of ODU basketball or football now whenever I hear the what's happening theme. And I'm hoping the band, if they was around, if they still played that song today, I'm hoping they're playing that a lot this Saturday as ODU faces its biggest game in school history, welcoming the NC State Wolfpack, their first ACC team, their first Power 5 team. They're welcoming into Norfolk. I know it's an exciting time. I know everyone's excited about it. I want to hear real quick from Bobby Wilder about these ACC games. This is a longer soundbite, but he has a lot of good information in there. So this is Bobby Wilder on ACC teams coming to play Old Dominion.
Right from the start, we've made it pretty clear we want to play ACC teams. We want to play regional teams, that there's fan interest. Number one, for our fans, and selfishly, we want to give that to our fans. You know, that's what they want. That's what they've asked for. With the change in league, Harry, when we went from the CAA to Conference USA, there just wasn't as much name recognition in the teams that we were playing. A lot of our fans don't yet know the teams in Conference USA, and that'll come. It's just going to be a matter of time before they start to recognize and get an appreciation for those teams. But if you ask any of our fans who's in the ACC, they can tell you. You know, they know Virginia and Virginia Tech are in the ACC. They know about NC State, North Carolina, Duke, Wake Forest. They know those names and those teams. So we want to give our fans what they want. And part of that, I've always felt like if you're playing in a conference that's national and your fans might not know it, then in your non-conference, try to play as many regional teams as you can, like Norfolk State, like Hampton. These ACC teams that there's name recognition. Now, we're still going to need to play teams from the MAC, like Eastern Michigan, or teams from the Sun Belt, like App State, because that's part of scheduling. You need to be able to do that. But the ACC is critical to our future success and what we're trying to build as a program. We need these games. We're going to continue to pursue them. I can't say the name Virginia Cavaliers enough. We're working on that. We're still trying to make that happen because I think that needs to happen. I really think we need to find a way to play Virginia. And as many ACC teams as we can play, we're going to continue to pursue that in the future.
Thank you to Old Dominion Sports Properties for using that sound. By the way, if you haven't gone to odusports.com, it is a great website. They put all these press conferences up, live games, taped games, not just football, but soccer, you name the sport, you can find it there. So it's a great media tool, and they do a great job over there, Ted Alexander and all those guys producing that. So that's odusports.com. Check it out. Get a membership. I know I have one. It's worth it. And once again, ODU Sports Properties, thanks for that sound. Listen, it's an exciting time getting this C school to come here. I mean, there's a lot on the list now coming. You know, we have Wake Forest down the road, UNC, Virginia Tech, and wow, getting UVA there would just be unbelievable. So let's look at NC State. What can we expect from them? I'll tell you what. First of all, the weather's not going to be a factor this week. There's no rain in the forecast as of right now, and it should be really a perfect night in Norfolk Saturday night at 7 p.m. for kickoff. It's probably going to be a little noisy. I would expect it to be very noisy. Monarch Nation should come out loud and rocking on that one, and they're going to make that stadium, which only holds 20,000, they're going to make it sound like 40. I know that for sure. Last year's NC State game was really a great game last year. Old Dominion actually led in the third quarter. Bobby Wilder admitted they got wore down with a little lack of depth, but this year they're a little deeper and they're more athletic, so I don't think that's going to be as much as an issue. NC State this year on offense has been pretty efficient, and they're getting a big boost this week by the return of preseason All-ACC selection senior running back Shadrick Thornton. This guy led their team in rushing the last 3 years. He's just getting off a 2-game suspension for violating team rules, and he's a very physical runner. And the one thing I've learned is someone coming off a suspension is usually angry, and they usually play that way. And being a physical runner like he is, I'm expecting a fast game because ODU wants to run the ball, and they want to run the ball. So it is going to be a running clock, lots of running, lots of physicality, and that's going to be a big challenge for this young ODU defense. You know, how are they going to handle that physical style of running, which they didn't really face at the first two games? They really were facing more the scrambling running back and a quarterback who gets out and trying to make something with his feet. Now they're going to kind of face that traditional pro-style running back with Shadrick Thornton is a pro prospect. So this is going to be a big challenge. And NC State runs deep at running back. Matthew Days right behind them filled in the first two games. Just in the first two games, 242 yards, 5 touchdowns. That's not bad backup for NC State right there. So expect them to run the ball. You know, when you look at these two teams, they actually are a little bit similar. They want to establish the run, and they want to set up some easy throws for their quarterback. Their quarterback, of course, is Jacoby Brissett. Hey, what do you know? Another scrambling-style quarterback that ODU has to face this week. So that's 3 weeks, 3 games, 3 scrambling-style quarterbacks. So I think it's real good that ODU had those first 2 games under their belts against these mobile quarterbacks. We saw some of the plays week 1 against Eastern Michigan where they got fooled on some misdirections and some swing back passes. They fixed those problems last week, but you might be seeing it more again this week. So I think they got a little bit of a bonus right there, having 2 games against scrambling quarterbacks, and now they have another one. So hopefully they'll learn their mistakes, learn their lessons from the previous 2 quarterbacks, and apply it to Brissett. But once again, I think it's going to be all about the run for NC State. They're going to really want to come in and just run Shadrick Thornton as much as possible. The guy hasn't played in a while, and that's what they want to do. You'll also see some 2 running back sets. They like to put Days and Thornton in the backfield together. Just, once again, just to cause that problem for the defense. They don't really have a stud receiver. They're kind of like ODU a little bit in that way, that they don't have a stud receiver to go to. They just have a lot of really good receivers. You know, looking at last year's game was Lay Rowery's coming out party. 14 carries, 71 yards, 3 touchdowns. He snuck up on him last year. He's not going to sneak up on him this year. He is definitely on their radar. He is going to be the focal point of that defense, especially after 2 200-yard games to start a season. NC State does have a veteran defense, especially in their secondary, so it's going to be a challenge for Shuler Bentley. Listen, he's going to have to perform well if ODU is going to win this game. I mean, I think everyone knows that. The defense, you know, you can't expect a shutout. You have to assume an ACC team is going to put up some points, so ODU needs to find 28 to 30 points if they're going to have a chance in this game. And that Ray Lowry's legs aren't going to do that all on his own. So Shuler needs to have the best game, really, of his life of his career if ODU is going to pull off the upset. He doesn't need amazing numbers. He doesn't need to be Taylor Heinicke and go out and throw 45 times and have five touchdowns, but he needs to be efficient. There will be plays there. There will be big plays available on the play action, and Shuler's going to have to make the throws. Last week, talking to Blair Roberts, I asked him who the deep threat was. Which receiver is the go-get-it guy? He said they could all do it. Now, I know that's kind of him talking up his team, but I just need one guy to do it. We need someone to go be that guy, to go get that deep ball and spread out that defense. Keep them honest so they can't just crunch the box and just sit on Ray Lowry running the ball the whole time. I think you might see some Ray Lowry catching out of the backfield, too. I think you're going to try and see him maybe a screen, maybe getting him out the ball out in the flat. And once again, Vincent Lowe doing the same kind of thing. So once again, I hate to put it all on the quarterback's shoulders, but Shuler Bentley, if ODU has any chance of winning this game, Shuler Bentley needs to be efficient, and he needs to make good decisions, and he can't turn the ball over. Like I said, he doesn't have to light up the scoreboard. You know, because with that running field, with those running backs that ODU has, they can spread the ball around, but he needs to be efficient. He needs to shoot, probably pass over 70%, no turnovers, and really just control the ball game. All right, so what did we learn this week? Well, I learned that Ray Lowry can squat 500 pounds, and he doesn't mind the nickname Baby Bull that I'm trying to get him to stick. He actually liked that nickname. I heard a little chuckle there. So I'm going to stick with it. I'm calling him Ray Baby Bull Lowry. So let's see if we can get that to stick. From Jay Harris, I learned it's okay to be an ODU homer, but I think I kind of knew that already. You know, I have enough memorabilia and enough T-shirts around here that I'm always wearing it out and about. So that's quite all right, too. All right, Monarch Nation, thanks for listening. Episode 3 of the Monarch Asylum podcast, putting it to bed right now. ODU's at 2-0. Let's hope they can go to 3-0. It's going to be a tough task, but you know what? It's going to be a fun game to watch. I hate to be a downer. I don't think they win, but I think they can make it close. I hope I'm wrong. I hope next week I have to tell you how wrong I was, and I hope you can tweet me and tell me how wrong I was. But we'll see. I just know one thing. It will be a fun game to watch, and the atmosphere in Norfolk is going to be through the roof. Everyone's going to have a great time, so be safe out there. Once again, don't forget to follow the show on Twitter, at ODU Asylum. We also have a Facebook page, and you can also visit the website, monarchasylum.com. It's a work in progress, you know. I'm trying to work on it, but there's a lot going on. So, but you can always find the podcast, the latest episode of the podcast on there, and also on iTunes. And once again, please tell your friends. If you have someone who's an ODU fan, especially they don't live in the region, if they're all over the place and they want to know how ODU football's going or they want to hear an interview, you know, post it on Facebook, share on Twitter. I'd really appreciate it. I know there's been a lot of support early, but I want to try and keep it rolling. So if I can give you guys a little homework, tell one person that you know is an ODU fan that doesn't know about this podcast, tell them about it. And let them know that it is out there, it is available, there is ODU, there is product out there talking about ODU football. Once again, until next week, I'm out. I'm David Agudelo. We'll see you next week for episode 4, and hopefully we'll be talking about a big ODU win over NC State.